Kia ora. This program is brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard.
The Quilt of Bananas program plays every Sunday, 10 to 11am, with news, views and music.
A collective of presenters, advertisers, community events and discusses news of interest to lesbians, queer women and non-binary folk.
We have interviews about past and future sports and cultural events, politics, films, art shows.
The programme is sponsored through the generosity of the Rural Foundation.
And it plays every Sunday from 10 to 11am on Wellington Access Radio, 106.1 FM.
Yes, there we go. Good morning. You're listening to the Quilted Bananas programme. I'm your host, Creek, this morning. We are broadcasting from the land of Te Atiawa here in central Te Whanganui Atara, Wellington. We are right in the heart of the great capital. And Quilted Bananas is an acronym, and it stands for Queer, Intersex, Intersectional, Lesbian, Trans, Takatāpui, NB, Diverse, Space, New Word, Bananas, Bisexual, Asexual, and Nanas. We have a literal nana, as well as many homebody-type metaphorical nanas. All nanas are valid. And this morning in the studio with me, we've got Sue on the tech desk. How's it going over there, Sue?
I'm getting there.
Sue's getting there.
I've found your USB. I've logged this in.
Woo!
I forgot that we have a radio as well as QB.
And Lily Catastrophe, woo!
Hello, it's so lovely to be here.
Hi Lily, is your mic on? Is Lily's mic on?
Is my mic on?
Okay, we love it. Yes, I can hear myself.
That sounds
this is
mic-y.
Amazing. Yay, sounds, we love.
That sounds microphone.
Yes.
We usually start the show with a song, and the reason that we do that is to get ourselves time. It's buying time for us to settle into the studio because we have about 30 seconds or 1 minute to 30 seconds when we first enter the studio. I'm getting a nod from the techie that we may or may not be ready with the song. We are ready with the song. This one was chosen by Lily, who will interview after the song. This is just actually buying me time to calm down, basically. Lily's probably fine. You're fine, aren't you, Lily?
I'm fine.
This song is called Stateside by Pink Pantheress.
No.
No, it's not.
I've got Dylan Joe.
Don't go with Dylan Joe yet. We're going to do a big thing on Dylan Joe later.
Guilt.
Okay, go with Red Light by The Guilt. You'll love this band. They're from Malmö in Sweden. And they've just released this new album and it's called, can't remember what it's called, Rat Night Market, something like that. One moment, please. Naked Rat Dance is the name of the album. Yeah.
Red Light.
Right.
These are dark times, and only one way we can go. Bad wine, I got a red on my mouth, and it's a sad sight, and only one way you can go.
That was the Gilt Red Light, a new single from them, and we'll talk more about them later when we get a chance. But we really want to get interviewing Lily Catastrophe. Whoop! Lily, we usually invite people to introduce themselves, so if you'd like to tell us a bit about yourself, then we'll hear a bit about your show that's coming up in the fridge.
Amazing. All right. So hello, everyone, again. I'm kia ora. I'm Lily Catastrophe. I am an emerging comedian and a burlesque performer. It's like a comedy cabaret performer, really, based in Te Whanganui Atara. I have been doing comedy since 2024, and I did last year did a solo show last year. Oh my goodness, it is last year. My brain just meant it was this year, but it's not. Last year, called Bottom Surgery, which is the story of my me trying to access gender affirming surgery in Aotearoa and ultimately having to go overseas for it. That made waves in in the New Zealand Fringe Festival last year and at New Zealand Comedy Fest.
Yeah.
And I went to Melbourne Fringe with it as well.
Oh, awesome. How did they go?
It was really fun. Melbourne Fringe specifically was quite like a different like beast to New Zealand. Each city that you go to where you kind of do a show is going to be really different. So like Wellington has a real good like posters scene and scene. Like there's posters around. You can go to like Midnight Espresso and put stuff up and there's flyers everywhere. Auckland is very different. Auckland doesn't have that.
All right.
Melbourne was quite similar. And Melbourne actually has a real flyer ring kind of vibe. And so you're like actively going out and pandering. You're papering shows and you're papering people. It's every city is completely different and there's a real learning curve. I really liked it, although I did find that Melbourne audiences, I'm not like an edgy comic by any means. I feel like my comedy is actually quite wholesome. But I start off with one joke that is maybe slightly edgy, and Wellington is okay with it. Auckland is quite on board, and Melbourne, when I say that joke, everyone's buttholes kind of tighten up really quickly. Is my experience. So yeah, I think there's something
different
there.
Different crowds. Oh well, that's really interesting and interesting what you're saying about even just different marketing methods per city. Yeah, I would not have thought about that. I was going to ask you about because you're also a pole performer and sort of the nexus between being a pole performer and a comedian. And if anyone listening has been to any of the cabaret or burlesque type shows that happen in Wellington, or maybe there are different flavours and I've only been to the sort of queerer ones, that there is this crossover between pole and comedy, although potentially if you're outside that scene, it wouldn't necessarily suggest itself to you that.
No.
Because you might go pole dancers. They're like hyper feminine and that is all they are.
Yeah.
And athletic, obviously. But there's a lot of crossover in those realms, certainly in Wellington. But I was going to ask you just how you kind of got into mixing those two phenomena of comedy and pole.
Yeah, I started doing pole. I transitioned in 2019. I found pole in 2020 because I wanted a way to like keep fit and to keep strong and to exercise. And pole was like really getting like a resurgence at that point. Like it had like a real like cultural moment, I think, in the late 2010s, early 2020s. And it's still continuing. This isn't like the cultural moment is over. It's not. lots of people are coming into pole. But pole dance is definitely something that I found as a, you know, kind of because of my initial perceptions of it, right? Like it's like being hyper feminine, something that, you know, kind of is like a womanly sport. And that's not what pole is at all. And, you know, I could do like a whole thesis on what pole is and isn't, but that's kind of how I got into it. And then comedy, I started doing. I started blending the two by accident, because like I in my actual life, I'm just kind of a funny, like I'm a silly goose, is kind of how I would describe myself. Like I'm a big ham, I'm dumb, I'm silly, and I think it just kind of came naturally to me to kind of mix in humor with what I was performing, especially once I got into burlesque, which I kind of did after doing pole for like a year, and I started getting into burlesque, and burlesque is very silly. And so something inherently funny about taking your clothes off and showing like like a glove, for example. Like a glove reveal is dumb, right? Like it's silly. Like you're like, oh, everyone has arms and we've seen everyone's arms and there's nothing sexual about it. But it's this whole thing. They're like, ooh, I'm taking my glove off. Like it's so silly. So it lends itself to kind of comedy. And then, yeah, just like I fell into comedy through a show called The Transgender Agender, which my friend Jules Daniel put on. And that was like an all trans comic lineup with some drag and burlesque acts. And so that kind of then kind of led me to doing more traditional forms of stand-up and comedy and all that kind of stuff. And yeah, and it all just kind of came together, I guess.
Right, so, in the burlesque melting pot.
Yeah, like pole burlesque. Like, yeah. And, you know, kind of, I think Neil Thornton, who runs the Wellington Comedy School, and Jojo Bellini, a very storied burlesque performer, put on a show called Stand Up and Spin. Mm-hmm. And so at that show, I did both stand-up and poll, not at the same time, although one day maybe I will try to do that.
Yeah, that would be, yep, that would be, yes, you'd be definitely, what is it, multitasking.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So speaking of burlesque, you in the Fringe Festival that's coming up on the 7th of March, that is, Lily's show is on the 7th of March, the entire Fringe is probably a fortnight or a month long or something like that, but you are doing Lily Catastrophe Presents Burlesque at the Gods.
Yes.
And is this the first time you've been the host of a lineup of other performers, like in a cabaret kind of format?
It's not the first. It's the first time I've done it in Wellington. Mm-hmm. Last year, I did a show called Femme down in Dunedin. That's a very long-running show, and I hosted that. That was mm-hmm. really fun.
Yeah, cool.
That Verona Vega puts on. But this will be my first time producing and hosting a show on home turf.
Yeah. I've got two questions. One is I want to hear about the other performers and like what the lineup is like. And the other question is, yeah, just that, is that multitasking for you? Because are you performing in it yourself and then also having to look at a host and introduce and hold space for other people and be the MC?
Yeah. So I think I'll tackle the cast first. I'm very excited about
Go
the
ahead.
Cast. I think my vision for the show was that kind of like, you know, Wellington / New Zealand's like best and brightest burlesque performers. Mm. And so I've got really, really amazing storied burlesque performers like Robin You're Blind, mm-hmm. who is just absolutely incredible. Love their work. So good. So, you know, kind of one of the teachers at the Velvet Haven, which is the burlesque school down here and also up in Auckland, but they're like the Wellington teachers. They're just absolutely incredible. So amazing. Have been doing it for so long. Just like one of the OGs. Who else have I got? I have Rangi Mahuta, who is like an emerging burlesque performer. She's done a whole lot of stuff at Circus of the Night. Just like really amazing stage presence, incredible energy. Vicky Weeds, who is again one of the other OGs, having doing it, like one of the goats really in Wellington. My personal burlesque big sister, who actually dragged me into the burlesque scene with both hands, just like dragging me in there.
Lily, come on.
Yeah, she is absolutely amazing. Absolutely love her. Who else is in it? Shania Kame, who is Shania Kame. Yeah. Really great, like non-binary, like giving it like a little bit more masque energy into the burlesque scene, because burlesque isn't just like pole burlesque is not like a fully, you know, feminine, you know, discipline. I love that. And so everyone's going to be bringing their like, you know, kind of shiniest, sparkliest, brightest. I have a couple of exciting, also Rachel Rouge.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely incredible. Just like the one of phenomenal, so storied performer, just like, you know, international, so good, love her. But I also have some exciting new performers that will debut on the burlesque stage that I am very excited about, and I don't know if I want to use their so they're called Auburn Muff. And they are an alter ego of someone that hopefully people in the scene are already quite familiar with. It will be very fun, yes. And I've got a very exciting stage kitten as well, and that I think I will reveal at a later date.
Cool.
So that's the cast. It's going to be so good. Everyone is so incredibly talented, and they're bringing their brightest, sparkliest, most opulent acts, and it's going to be so much fun. It's going to be so much fun. I'm so excited. What was your second question? I've forgotten.
It was just how does it feel to be, does it feel like sort of, does it feel like multitasking that you are going to be in the role of host, but also performing? I mean, hosting is a form of performing. MCing is a form of performing, but then you're also doing a number or two numbers. I don't know. How many numbers?
I'm actually just, I actually am just hosting the show. So I'm doing a, I will open the show with kind of an act, maybe not like a full burlesque act, but definitely like a burlesque-ish act, which will be very fun. But my role for the evening is to facilitate everyone else being just incredible performers, because honestly, it's going to be such a treat. Everyone is so good. So good. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, I mean, emceeing is totally an art form in itself. Often the MC kind of carries the show. If I reflect on cabarets and burlesque shows that I've been to, often it's, I do remember the hosts, you know, whether they were good with the audience or just having a bad night, whatever, you know. So, yeah.
Yeah.
And the venue is new.
It is new.
Would you like to tell us about the venue?
The Gods is a new venue, the Gods Paramount. It is where the old Paramount Cinemas was. I've seen the loft. It is a beautiful, like, nice space with, like, really, like, great architecture and like the kind of wooden kind of, you know, those, like, what are they called, like, not the beams, but, like, you know, they're like the spines of the roof. I don't know, every time I look at them they look like
you're an engineer thing. What is that thing called?
They look like fish bones, you know, the fish bones off the roof.
You're in the ribcage of the whale now.
It looks absolutely incredible. I haven't seen it fully kitted out with the stage yet, so we're yet to see how that will look, but I'm really excited to use that space. Wellington, we've lost a couple of venues over the past year. So it's a real welcome addition, and I'm really excited to be part of one of the first cohort of this new venue.
I mean, the Paramount itself was a loss, you know, some years ago when it was a cinema. So it's great that it's coming back as an arts venue.
Yes.
And it's also like, why did you have to shut it in the first place? You could have opened the Gods at the top and kept the cinema.
Yeah.
But anyway, hey, listen, never mind. Onwards and upwards, folks. There are still cinemas.
There are.
Should we pause for a song?
We could do that.
All right. Now I believe we are going to have Stateside by Pink Pantheress. Or are we?
I'm freezing outside. I feel my skin tight. My coat is inside. But I look up at you. I track your plane ride. The one you're in tonight. Tell me, when is the next time I'll run into you?
Can be my medicine. How, how, why can't you say?
Hello, welcome back to the Quilted Bananas program on Wellington Access Radio. You're here with Creek, Sue, and our guest, Lily Canastrophe. Woo! during that song interlude, there was actually quite a big reveal here in the studio, which is that Lily's not only in Burlesque at the Gods during the Fringe Festival that's coming up. You might say I didn't do my research, but Lily, would you like to tell us about the other shows that you're in the Fringe Festival?
Would love. So I will also be in the Airhorn Fringe Fest Fantasia, which is Airhorn is a long-running alt-comedy show that happens out of the Newtown Community Centre. It's got a whole bunch of incredible comedians like Zach Mandeville, Lisa McLeod Whiting, Elaine Dick, Booth, Jack and Booth, just like a whole cast, and Ginger Minge, a whole cast of people. I love all of these people. We're doing a show on the 20th of February at the Newtown Community Centre, home base. It is Fringe Fest Fantasia. It's going to be great. I'm very excited for it. The other show that I'm in is Dirty Rice, which is an all-Asian comedy evening that is at the Gods Paramount on Tuesday and Wednesday the 17th and 18th of Feb. Again, going to be absolutely incredible. Ralph Hilaga, Elliot Lam, Chin Wang, a whole bunch of comedians who are going to be great. Also Asians, so we love that.
Yay! Woo! Asians!
And finally, I am in Squirt the Reunion, which is a murder mystery, boy band murder mystery musical.
I need to take my wife to that. She's always on about boy bands.
Yes, it is about a boy band that comes back together 10 years after the fact. And it is a murder mystery, and it has original songs, and we all sing live. It's myself, Elliot Lam, who is also in Dirty Rice, Keegan Thomas, incredibly funny, Mo Mun, and Q Potts, and Aaron James Douglas.
Something for everyone.
So, and that's on the 25th and the 26th of February at Hannah Playhouse. So, yes, come along to that. Yes. That's going to be really great.
So, you can get yourself a program to the Lily Catastrophe, Fringe Festival, which is from the 13th of February to the 7th of March.
Yes.
They'll be in cafes, as you were saying, you can go to midnight, you can get a program.
Yeah.
There are cafes. They have Fringe Festival programs. Yes. There's also the internet.
Yes.
Wow. That's quite mind blown by how busy you are. Is that because you make a living from this, or because you're just an extremely high octane person with a lot of energy to give?
I am a low octane person with who just says yes to too many things. I don't make a living from this. This is not. I have a 9 to 5. I'm a 9 to 5er. Mm-hmm. I love doing comedy. I love doing burlesque. And most of my friends are comedians or burlesque performers, mm-hmm, or related to the arts in some way. And so it's kind of also just a chance for us to hang out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's really nice.
Cool. That's amazing. Did I have another question? I can't remember. Oh, yeah. I just wanted to ask about, but now I'm kind of getting an idea of why, maybe, that Burlesque at the Gods is at 9:30 at night. I'm a night owl. I love that you are doing a thing that starts at 9:30 at night and it only goes for 60 minutes, so you can still get public transport home, everybody.
Yes.
Is that the reason that it's at 9:30 is because you're doing all these other things earlier in the night, or you want this night thing for late night people?
I think burlesque is a really interesting thing, and I think burlesque, it's appropriate for burlesque to be at late night because it's quite an adult art form, I guess.
Yeah,
whereas,
yeah.
If you're doing comedy, if it starts earlier, you're fine. You can maybe sneak some 16-year-olds in, whereas you really don't want that for burlesque.
No.
It's people coming down to pasties. It's too much. Maybe even a merkin. It depends. It's too much.
Yeah.
So 9:30 is a really good time for it. And also, you want to be a little bit loose. Goosey, the audience to be kind of a little bit, if they've gone out for an evening, that you want them to be slightly less inhibited. And how you get there, I'm not going to comment, but you kind of want a good buzz from the audience, right? And so 9:30 is a good time to just kind of get that.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I always think that coming from the dark, which won't be dark here at that time, but into that dramatic sort of dark environment with the colour and the, I always think, I couldn't think of burlesque during the day, really.
Yeah.
No, true.
It'd be so odd.
Yeah. Might even still be daylight savings by then, but it's only 9:30. It's definitely dark by 9:30 in March. March the 7th, everyone. And it's a cool opportunity also to, if you're sort of not familiar with the scene, to explore the more the diversity of burlesque, that it's a little bit probably more diverse, varied and intricate than you might think. So check it out, March the 7th, Fringe Festival at Paramount Gods, which is at the top of the old Paramount Cinema at 9:30 p.m. That's just one of the many Lily Catastrophe shows that you can see in the Fringe. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
We're going to move on now and play a song by Dylan Joe. Let's just jump in and play the song. And then, no.
That wasn't it.
That's not it. But we'll jump in and play the song and then I'll back announce who they are. They're a Wellington outfit and they're led by a queer couple. So that's pretty cool.
Sorry about that.
You're all good.
She waited in her room. The rain told her to. Filled with hope were her eyes. The branches in her mind. It was you.
Dylan Joe, that's spelled D-I-L-L-O-N, Joe, J-O. And they are Wellington-based Betty Smith and Georgie Levine. Those are the two singers you could hear there. And my techie Sue was just saying, what well-matched voices they are. And they're partners in real life. So that's pretty cool. And what the blurb I've got here for them from their website, which is dylanjoemusic.com, if you want to hear more about them and see the numerous gigs that they have coming up in February and March. Dylan Joe build paths between the elements of dream pop, shoegaze, folk, alt-rock and indie pop to create their genre-defying sound that they call dreamy, droppy rock pop. And they've made quite the stir in Te Whanganui a Tara Wellington recently. And what does it say here? Oh, their music is authentic and represents their journey together. Their debut single, It Was You, She's Been Waiting For, which you just heard there, quickly gained attention in the Wellington music scene. Their music explores the complexities of love, their relationship with one another as queer women, the process of change, and their experience in the LGBTQ community. And they also have recently released a single called Shiver, where they are sort of pivoting more into that shoegaze sound, and it's more heavier shoegazy. It's a really cool single if you find it online. And that is because, well, according to this blurb, of the addition of Kahu Sanson Burnett and Rua Munro, bringing in the drums and other instruments to bring a more heavier sound there. So yeah, pretty cool to have that right here in Wellington. So I'd really recommend checking out some of their gigs. They will be at San Fran on February the 12th, Performance Arcade on both February the 22nd and March the 1st, and Newtown Festival on March the 8th, and Coopadoopa on March the 28th. So that's pretty cool. We're going to groove on into our next interview. We've got a really chocker show today, which is me talking with 11 about a workshop called The Stories of Our Bodies. Hit it, Sue.
I'd like to say thank you so much for having me on the show. I love that so many communities that I'm a part of have gotten better at using particular kinds of technology, which means that our access has increased and that people's sense of safety is greater. And it also means that I can speak to you on your radio show while I sit here on Wurundjeri country on the Kulin part of the world, here in so-called Melbourne in Australia, and I can chat with you. It's just delightful to be here. Thank you. For your listeners, my name's 11. I use they or she pronouns. I'm really enjoying using she a lot in queer community so that she doesn't get forgotten. And I like people like my mum and dad's friends to get a little bit of practice. So I might use they, them a little bit more there. I'm originally from the middle of the North Island. So I was born in Putaruru while my family were living there. Actually, mum and I got sent off to Hamilton Hospital. I grew up in Rotorua, a little bit in Tauranga. And so that's my home beach, and the way that South Pacific Ocean comes rolling into those beautiful beaches. That's my salt water, and the Kaimai Mamaku Ranges sat at my back while I was growing up. And I was lucky enough to grow up a little bit out of town. So I had lots of creeks and waterways and rivers. I remember being 13, which was the legal age for whitewater rafting. And my father took me out the back to the water there that flowed down off the Kaimai Ranges. And that was my first opportunity to do that. So that's the country that I'm from. And right now I'm living in Melbourne or Naarm. Which is a really extraordinary city and provides me with lots of amazing opportunities, including speaking to you today.
Yeah, cool. It's really great to hear. I wasn't actually aware that you were of New Zealand, sort of like that your immersion growing up was in the land and the waters of this place. So that's really cool. And you sort of divide your time a little bit between both countries, don't you? So you are sometimes here, and you will be here in February doing a workshop in Te Whanganui a Tara, Wellington, on the 28th of Feb. And the workshop is called The Stories of Our Bodies. Maybe I didn't say that properly. The Stories, plural, The Stories of Our Bodies. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Oh, I'd love to. So I'm a member of the Radical Fairy community, which maybe some of your listeners don't know about, but the Radical Fairies was a cultural movement that sprung up out of gay men's communities at a time when a lot of social capital was given to people who were presenting butch. And the Sissies and the Queens were organizing to find a place for themselves. Probably the most famous founder or originator of the radical fairy movement was a person called Harry Hay. And with his friends and boyfriends, they started looking for a place for the Sissy and the Queen, people who wanted to develop an earth-based spiritual practice, and people who wanted to overcome the kind of objectification that they were seeing in their communities a lot, and develop what became known as subject-subject consciousness. So rather than the objectification of here I am and you are the other, right, rather we are each subjects. And how does that work? So from the fairy community, we get such delightful cultural practices as heart circles, where everybody shares from the heart and everybody takes turns and listens deeply and really receives that information. And that practice has really informed the stories of our bodies, which was the permission that I had to present the workshop was given to me by T. Cozy, who in the broader LGBTQIA plus community, I call us the Rainbow Mafia, it's called Uncle as a sign of respect. So T. Cozy's definitely an uncle, and is my also my peer, my cobber, and my dear friend. And I haven't actually spent heaps of time back home in Aotearoa lately, because I spent 5 years in the US and I didn't come back to the Southern Hemisphere while I was there. But before I left, T. Cozy allowed me to develop the workshop myself and take it with me to the US to share the work, because it's really valuable. It creates an opportunity for people to be witnessed in their bodies. It's an opportunity for storytelling and for us to share with other people how we see ourselves, what our histories are with our bodies. And so you can imagine all kinds of different stories come out in the circle that we hold. T. Cozy developed this workshop within the radical fairy community as a gay man who's HIV positive. And many, many moons ago, his boyfriend at the time suggested that he do some work to improve his body image. And so he ended up going to this men's group where gay men who were HIV positive spent weeks together developing relationships of trust and speaking about their bodies in ways that were affirming as their relationships changed with their bodies, because they were experiencing diagnosis, becoming HIV positive, and that experience for them, I mean, it's changed so much. And the only exposure that I have is through other people's stories and being part of communities where people are HIV pos, where they're doing the work of addressing the likelihood of transmission and celebrating that transmission as part of these days. But from those origins, stories has come through me to places in the US among queer and trans communities, and has evolved in a particular way. And what I'm offering in Aotearoa, both as part of the Auckland Pride Festival program and also at the Newtown Community Centre, is in co-facilitation with Val Smith, who I call Dr. Dance, because they have a PhD in queer choreography. Like, so somebody with that kind of background, with a somatics practice and craniosacral training, like what will happen as we experiment in this workshop, as we always do, with how to hold and support each other to tell our own stories of our bodies, not how people perceive us, not just how it was when I was younger or how I imagine it might be when I'm older, but just to be able to tell our own stories. And for Val to have a chance as we establish our container to really settle us into our bodies and to deepen that relationship with it, I'm really excited about that, and it's the first time that that's happening.
Oh, cool. So it's being sort of tailored to what is here in this country and who I suppose is here. And so in practice, the workshop, how does it sort of roll? Like, if I'm going along, I'm like, this is all cool to hear about, but what would happen to me? What am I going to do at this workshop?
Are you ready to maybe be a little bit shocked or scared?
I could be, although I'm pretty open-minded, but go.
Okay. We sit around in a circle and we all take turns taking our clothes off
mm-hmm.
in front of each other.
Yeah.
And that experience is held within a very tender, respectful, and vulnerable kind of circle.
Yeah.
Where people remove as many articles of clothing as they feel that they want to. So mm-hmm. some people are completely naked. Some people are down to their underwear. It's just we are rich in embodied consent in this mm-hmm. workshop. So as much as you're able to, but my experience, having done this a lot now, is that my level of comfort and my sense of safety is co-regulated, right? I'm co-regulated. I'm impacted by what are other people doing around me in a way that I can positively experience a sense of permission or ease with my own. So what is okay to do in this space, right? And mm-hmm. as we're practicing a collective responsibility for what happens in that space, people make a choice that's in relationship to what is happening within themselves and also what other people are doing around them.
Yeah.
So people get a little bit braver because it's always modeled by the facilitator first. So, mm-hmm. and I just get all my kit off. That's just where I'm at with it. I don't think I've ever not gotten completely naked in the in stories. And then people decide what they want to. And in that, standing in the middle of this circle of people who have made an agreement to hold each other and to offer dignity and respect and to honour each other's stories, it's such an incredibly powerful and liberating and potent moment to be held and witnessed by each other in what do I want you to know about who I am? What needs telling?
Mm-hmm.
What are the stories that maybe need composting, right? They want to come up and out and then we leave them there, right? And so it has been a really cathartic experience for some people, a very emotional, very vulnerable experience. And what I see quite often in this workshop is where people feel bravery or courage in doing something, and it's a little bit challenging when we do it and we're well held and that fear or that vulnerability is met with dignity and respect. The way people can leave that space, it's a really profound impact, right? How people leave feeling, and you can see it different in their body, right? Like when I'm feeling like I've challenged myself and I've done something which positively affects my sense of self-esteem. My shoulders are back a little bit, my chin's up, right? Mm-hmm. I'm just carrying myself with a little more pride and dignity, which is what's so beautiful about being part of the Auckland Pride Festival, is in all of these conversations between people who hold a radical analysis of patriarchy, capital and empire, and are critical of how that is coming into our festivals and our social interactions and our riots and our street marches and our parades. When I think about what makes me proud, it's for a bunch of people who don't necessarily know each other to come together and hold each other and to offer each other that witness and to commit to maintaining the dignity and respect of everybody that's in that room. It's a really powerful experience. It feels to me like a cauldron.
Yeah, cool. That's a cool way of describing it. That threw up several questions for me, so now my brain's a little bit scrambled. One moment, please, caller. So I can imagine there are like I am quite close with a facilitator. Let's say I'm married to one. So I know that in rooms there are always different personalities and people with different stuff that comes up that can be disruptive for a circle or for a group. And I was just wondering how I can imagine in a space like that, you might get sort of exhibitionists who maybe they throw all of their clothes off and then they're maybe potentially kind of jollying others along who aren't really there yet or anything like that. And I was wondering, how do you manage sort of anything that might happen that's disruptive in that space that might tend to feel like peer pressure to some, or there are people who are going to keep all their clothes on as a way to hold power over others or something like that? Do you have experiences of that? Why did I go towards the negative thing? I don't know, my own fear probably of like what, but bad things could happen and these are the bad things, so excuse me for going in that direction.
I appreciate that. I understand, as I said, because I've been doing this as often as I can, why people get afraid. All right, because we are, it's not a metaphor. We are standing naked before each other, right? And if that's not bloody scary, I don't know what is. Literally naked in front of people that we've never met. Or I had a circle one time where two people who came had a working relationship. Like, you want to do that with your boss? You want to do that with your boss in the room? How are we going to figure that out?
That would actually probably be the only hard limit for me. I would probably no, I don't, because I really, 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 in my professional context, try to maintain an absolute boundary between my private life and my working life. I just don't want anything to cross that line. That would be the only thing that would probably cause me to leave, actually. Yeah.
Well, I'm really glad to have hit on the thing that would cause you to leave, because these are the things that people come up with, right? We really have a propensity to catastrophize. Like, it's not just you. It's kind of, it's a very common human experience. We go to, what would the worst thing be?
Yeah.
So I'm glad I've reached a story that's even more fearful for you than the one that you came to me with, right? Like, let's think about the worst thing that happened and how do I manage that? I want to say, with as much confidence and as little ego as I can, I manage it skillfully. And I also don't take all the responsibility for it.
Yeah.
My role as a facilitator in this space is to steward the meeting of people coming together, right?
Yeah.
So I'm stewarding, I'm shepherding. And I know that role sits differently for different people. Another way that I describe myself sometimes is that I'm the janitor or the cleaner, right? I've set up the chairs.
Yeah.
I've put the kettle on for a cup of tea. If there's a big mess afterwards, I clean it up.
Yeah. Right?
And the big mess afterwards has sometimes been people need a longer period of time to transition out of the cauldron that we've created and back into their worlds as it is. Because this is a really precious, back in my organizing days as a baby anarchist, we call them temporary autonomous zones, right? We're creating something that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
And that's kind of scary.
Yeah. It's also really beautiful, though, like temporary autonomy spaces. As soon as you said that, I thought of times that I've been in temporary autonomy spaces. And, yeah, they're just so precious. And then you do walk out of them and it's like, here I am back in the quote marks real world. But the you know, autonomy spaces could be the real world too, if only.
I mean, when you think about, I don't know if you're the kind of person to go to festivals or you know, those really special events, and then as we're leaving and I'm putting my whatever back on to head out into the world, I go, why can't it always be like that? It's kind of like that excitement as a kid going to Disneyland or the, you know, like the water park, or go, it's like, why can't we carry this? So that's part of the work we do, is to try to think about how we can install some of this in us so that we can offer it to other people in our lives. And that's a really beautiful thing that I love. Often at the end of this particular workshop, people will speak about how meaningful it was, how transformative it was. And what's even more precious to me is when I hear from a third party, This happened to me when I was, we were, Tikozy and I co-facilitated it at the Tropical Fruits Festival, which is a five-day extravaganza of the joy and beauty and pride of being queer at part of the Rainbow Mountsphere. And I heard from somebody that I know in community who had listened to a friend of theirs talk about their beautiful experience in the workshop. And, you know, at the end of a workshop, you've had an amazing experience and you say to the facilitator, wow, that was incredible. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
And I love receiving that. But what was even more precious to me was hearing from that person's friend later about how they came back and how they were impacted by this workshop, right? Because those are the ripples out.
Yeah.
I do want to be able to go back, if you don't mind, to your question of, like, you know, how do we handle it?
Mm.
How do we handle it when bad things happen? Not just in this workshop, but anywhere. And one of the things that I've learned to do as somebody who stewards circles and spaces and meetings and workshops is, how does the group want to handle this?
Mm.
So one of the things that I do, if I think somebody's bringing a lot of ego into a space, is I might just sit there and go, I'm not sure if this is actually what's happening, but I'm feeling a lot of something, like, name it.
Right.
Say it, right? Be transparent. And then just sit back and say, is anybody else noticing that? Or is that what you meant to bring? Or did you want to shape it a little bit differently?
Yeah.
Because it's not like we don't run into people with ego everywhere we go. You know, there are people with malicious intention. There are, we call them bad actors. I don't believe in that really. I'm more about how, you know, sometimes I do harm I don't intend to, or sometimes I make mistakes, right?
But I wonder how much of harm doing is about a lack of, just lack of self-awareness, and that if you're doing a facilitation or a space where you are actually naming things, that can help people to become more or aware at all that what they're doing is maybe boundary crossing or too fast, too far, or something like that. I don't know.
I do put a lot of stead in my capacity to create a container, and we really do spend time at the beginning setting expectations about what this is and what it isn't. I mean, it even says on the invitation to come, this is about a group of participants being in active consent, right? Nothing happens that you don't want to have happen about the autonomy of your own body, because we're practicing bodily autonomy, right?
Yeah.
And nothing happens in this space that is the least bit sexy.
Yeah.
Like a bunch of people sweating and nervous about how their turn is coming, there's nothing sexy about it, right? And then there's just like, well, here's the accident, how I got this scar. And here's my feet, and my feet have always been a little too hairy, too wide, too narrow, too flat, too whatever. And I just, you know, it's a room of people. It's just not there in the room.
Yeah.
So creating that container, holding it really strongly, being transparent in my facilitation and naming things if I have a question. And, you know, like most people, I come with curiosity because I'm like, did I get this right? Is this what I'm seeing? I bet you didn't mean that. So what do we do to shift this? And I just haven't had any fuckwits.
Great.
And I don't think that that's luck. I think it's probably a mix of good luck and good management.
Yeah. Cool. It sounds like a really great and, you know, the world out there is big and there's lots of bad stuff going on and capitalism. But it's really amazing that you're doing this workshop to just help bring people back to the beauty of their bodies, not objective beauty, just the beauty of being alive and having a body and feeling things and sensation and lived experience of various things, including the negatives. I mean, it's all part of being alive, and to take time out of people's lives to reflect on that. It sounds really heartening and therapeutic in a way, without medicalizing it. So thanks.
Thank you. I really appreciate that perspective. That's lovely.
Cool. Well, I hope that it goes well and I might see you there.
Thanks, Preet. Thank you very much for your time, and I appreciate your listeners' time and attention as well. If anybody has any questions, please reach out. The tickets and registration are available on a sliding scale starting at zero. And you can just click contact host and Humanitix will shoot me an email if anybody has any questions. But I don't know if you're able to offer people a link to register in your show notes, but that's a way that they can contact me.
Yep, we'll put it up on our Facebook page, link to the tickets.
Oh, that would be amazing.
Yeah.
And I hope to see as many of your listeners as are interested on February the 28th at the Newtown Community Centre.
Hello. Welcome back to the Quilted Bananas program. That's February the 28th for the Stories of Our Bodies at the Newtown Community Centre. And we've got about 20 seconds left, something like that. If you want to find out more about that show, about that workshop, go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/quilted.
The Quilted Bananas program plays every Sunday, 10 to 11am, with news, views and music.
A collective of presenters, advertisers, community events and discusses news of interest to lesbians, queer women and non-binary folk.
We have interviews about past and future sports and cultural events, politics, films, art shows.
The program is sponsored through the generosity of the Rural Foundation.
And it plays every Sunday from 10 to 11am on Wellington Access Radio, 106.1 FM.
That program was brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard. Thanks New Zealand On Air for funding accessmedia.nz.